This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
The first dog I had was from SPCA, so both of my dogs have been adopted, and I think that's the best way to do it. Even breeders who claim to be responsible aren't responsible. That's not their, they don't get to play God and decide which dogs get to breed when, and I don't think it's right.
Ohio is America's second largest puppy mill state, according to the Humane Society of the United States. Now the group Stop Puppy Mills Ohio is circulating a petition to put an anti-puppy mill issue before voters next November. Their proposed constitutional amendment would put new restrictions on commercial dog breeding. And here to discuss the movement, our senior director of the Humane Society's Stop Puppy Mills campaign, John Goodwin, Paws, Look, Listen certified professional dog trainer Nick Hoff, and Jim Tomaszewski, who serves on the boards of SPCA Cincinnati, Cincinnati Lab Rescue, and the Ohio Council for the Humane Society. And if you'd like to join us, you can do so 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jim, good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Nick, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And John, thank you for joining us today as well.
Oh, glad to be here.
John, let's start with you and have you tell us about the movement, the Stop Puppy Mills Ohio organization. Well, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, Stop Puppy Mills Ohio is a coalition of people from throughout the state of Ohio who want to see something done about the puppy mill problem. And right now, we're in the signature gathering phase. We're trying to collect the required number of signatures to place a measure on the 2018 ballot that would reform dog breeding in the state of Ohio. And it's a volunteer-driven effort. We've got people out at events throughout the state. And, you know, we encourage people when they see these folks to sign the petition. And for those who are particularly motivated, maybe even volunteer with the campaign and help get out there and help us get some more signatures.
Well, you mentioned the problem of puppy mills in the state of Ohio. What is a puppy mill, and how many of these do we have in the state?
Yeah. Well, a puppy mill is a dog breeding establishment for profit where the needs of the animals are not being met, where corners are cut. Generally, these are large-scale, kind of high-volume facilities. And the USDA does a regulation and inspection of certain facilities that sell through pet stores and have a certain number of breeding females or sell online. And by their count, there are about 282, but they only cover a certain percentage of these facilities. The Ohio Department of Agriculture regulates about 400 and then thinks there's about 800 or 900 more that no one's taking a look at all. And even the ones that are being inspected, they have standards that are incredibly weak, standards that no one would allow their pet to live in. For example, under the USDA rules, you can keep a mother dog in a cage that is only 6 inches longer than her body, with her feet on wire, you know, paws never touching grass, bred repeatedly until her body wears out, and be in complete and total compliance with the rules. It's completely unacceptable.
So what's in the constitutional amendment? What would the regulations would be? What areas would it address specifically?
Yeah, so there's two sides to it. First is the standards for commercial dog breeding facilities in the state of Ohio. So any place with eight or more breeding female dogs will be required to provide exercise and socialization and good clean food twice a day and good clean water. They would not be able to put dogs in cages. They're just stacked one on top of the other. That's how they get overcrowding, which leads to waste disposal problems and high concentrations of ammonia in the air. Dogs would be required to have veterinary exams once a year, and they would have to screen for genetic disorders that are common to certain breeds so that, you know, we would have healthier puppies as a result. The second side of the initiative is it relates to sales. So the places that are selling puppies must acquire them from breeding facilities that meet these standards. That's good for the dogs, and it's also good for Ohio families, because so many of these puppy mills produce puppies that end up being sick. We hear horror stories every single day from people who have spent $3,000 on a puppy at a pet store, and then the puppy's gotten sick immediately, or was already sick and they didn't realize it, and then they spend a few thousand more dollars on veterinary bills, And by having these very basic but humane standards of care, these animals will be raised in cleaner, better conditions and be healthier as a result. So it's good for everybody. It's good for families. It's good for the dogs.
Jim, okay, so this is a constitutional amendment. Now, we've got some legislation that's already in place dealing with this specific issue. Why the need for this, and why is it a constitutional amendment?
Well, a constitutional amendment does a couple of things. It establishes some permanency in these standards. We can depend on the legislature to a certain extent, but when the people of Ohio, broadly across Ohio, have said these standards as they exist are not good enough, this is not acceptable for these businesses, if they want to participate in the free market and profit from the breeding of dogs, that's fine. But as citizens of Ohio, we've said to the legislature, to varying degrees of success, we expect more. And in the absence of sufficient and satisfactory legislative action, the Constitution provides for exactly this type of ballot initiative.
Nick, what's your take on this as a professional dog trainer?
Sure. So I'm really glad to see this initiative coming up because as a trainer, I see dogs every single day who lack training and socialization that affects their behavior, honestly, for their entire lifetime. So when I have clients who have contacted me with a dog that they believe came from a puppy mill, I know pretty typically that we're going to have a lot of fear issues, some possible aggression issues, and these are going to be long-term issues that will take probably years of work and patience and time and money in order to help those dogs overcome. And so seeing better standards across the board for how these puppies come into the world and how owners get these puppies can help to make a really big difference. Because when we get dogs from responsible breeders, we do not see these issues at near that same high rate.
Mm-hmm. So in the opening comment that we had at the start of the show, we heard the comment that there are no responsible dog breeders. So here I'm hearing you say there are. Is that right, Nick?
Yes, there definitely are a lot of responsible breeders. They are people who typically are in love with the breed of dog that they are raising. These are very typically very low volume businesses. These they don't usually do it to make much of a profit. They are doing it to help just kind of further the breed that they love and that they care for. Typically, these are dogs who are actually living inside the home with families. They are getting care and exercise every single day. They are these people's pets. And one of the things that I was speaking with a colleague of mine just the other day about is how important the care of the mothers is. So there is research coming out right now that shows that the stress levels, the cortisol levels that mother dogs have or feel when they are pregnant can have a dramatic impact on the puppies that they give birth to. And so not only ensuring that the puppies are well cared for when they are born, but also ensuring that the 2 months prior that the mother dog is pregnant, that dog is in a safe, comfortable, and stress-free environment is absolutely critical.
John, would this amendment address the issue of a mother dog having puppies too close together?
There are going to be limits on just repeated back-to-back-to-back breedings. Each dog could be bred twice in an 18-month period, which means that they will likely have a break between cycles. What we see in these puppy mills is they want to squeeze every single dime out of these mother dogs, and so they'll just breed them repeatedly. And their bodies are just worn out. By the time that they're no longer able to reproduce, sometimes they're killed. Sometimes rescues do manage to get their hands on them. And they have dogs that have just incredible physical problems. And this was many years ago, back in 2000, I was living in Dallas, and I adopted a teacup Yorkshire Terrier. My girlfriend at the time had met someone who ran a puppy mill, and he had this dog he said he was going to kill because she couldn't breed anymore. And so she said, well, let us take her in. So we took this Yorkie in named Delilah. She was missing all of her teeth except for two. Part of her lower jaw was missing from the dental disease that she had. And she was skin and bones, emaciated, and because she had just been bred so much. And it took us years. I mean, the stories that Nick's telling, that was exactly what we experienced. I mean, the time it took. And we never got her completely out of the shell that she was in. We never completely got her completely healthy. But, you know, her body was just worn out, and she was so scarred. And this happens to thousands and thousands of dogs in the state of Ohio.
How will this be monitored, should this pass? How would it be monitored, and what would happen if a breeder did not comply?
So the Ohio Department of Agriculture, at this point, licenses and then inspects certain high-volume dog breeder facilities. Now, the question is, who do they inspect? And it's a very complicated threshold. They cannot go in and inspect one of these facilities right now unless they can prove that the breeder has produced at least 9 litters of puppies in a calendar year and sold 60 puppies in a calendar year. We're changing that threshold to something that is more concrete, something that's harder for, you know, because right now any breeder can say, well, I only sold 59 puppies, I didn't sell 75, and avoid any inspection at all. We're changing that to something that an inspector can easily identify, the number of breeding female dogs. And then from there, they'll go into these facilities regularly and inspect. And if someone is out of compliance, then they'll be penalized. And what the penalties are, it can be fines, it can be revoking a license. Of course, that's going to depend on a number of things, the severity of the violation, the track record at that place. And the Ohio Department of Agriculture and the legislature are going to have leeway to expand on those penalties and protections going farther if they need to.
What would happen to the dogs in that case?
Ideally, and it depends. I mean, if it's something minor, then they're going to stay there. But if there is significant cruelty, significant neglect going on, we want to see dogs seized, rescued, and then adopted out to loving families. But, you know, a lot of times that doesn't happen. I mean, there was just a story in Iowa with a notorious puppy mill that the USDA spent years trying to shut down. And we were disappointed to see that while they revoked his license and said that he couldn't breed dogs anymore, they let him sell the dogs to other puppy mills, and that was not satisfactory.
Would this have an impact on out-of-state breeders that supply dogs to Ohio sellers? Would that, and Jim, you're shaking your head there, so if you want to go ahead and address that.
Sure. No, that's part of what's important about this initiative, is that the standards that are being set forth also apply to any retailers within the state. They're required to buy dogs that are bred according to these standards.
Mm-hmm. Would this put a huge strain on shelters if a lot of these breeders get shut down and these dogs have to find new homes?
I don't believe so. I think one of the most impressive things about this initiative has been the broad base of support that we've seen from small shoestring budget rescues, shelters across the country, and large national leading organizations like HSUS. If there were and are going to probably be situations where rescue and shelter of those dogs is necessary, I am 100% comfortable that the community of animal welfare advocates in Ohio will step up and make sure that that takes place.
We will continue our conversation about Stop Puppy Mills Ohio. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
You know, a lot of people want to breed dogs, which is great. I think it's in the form of a great way to make money. If I were to purchase a dog, I would either go to a shelter or I would personally just adopt. You know, I wouldn't necessarily go to a breeder. You know, I know a lot of dogs that are from breeds and they're very, very awesome.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Here to discuss Stop Puppy Mills Ohio, our senior director of the Humane Society's Stop Puppy Mills campaign, John Goodwin. Pause, Look, Listen, certified professional dog trainer Nick Hoff, and Jim Tomaszewski, who serves on the boards of SPCA Cincinnati, Cincinnati Lab Rescue, and the Ohio Council for the Humane Society. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And I should point out, we reached out to the Ohio Professional Dog Breeders Association and did not hear back from them. We also contacted Petland, and they weren't able to join us, but they did send a statement, which I would like to discuss with the three of you. And the statement says that they initially supported Ohio Senate Bill 130 that was known as the High Volume Breeder Bill. And they say, unfortunately, we believe a significant loophole exists in Senate Bill 130, allowing many Ohio commercial breeders to operate without regulatory oversight. And we believe that this loophole also places Ohio's hardworking professional breeders who are complying with current Ohio law at a big disadvantage. Petland believes it's time to close this massive loophole in Ohio by voting in favor of the Ohio Puppy Mill Prevention Amendment. Like SB 130, this amendment's not perfect, and we believe several standards can yet be improved with more collaboration with various stakeholders. So they're supporting it, but they say it still needs some work. So what's your reaction to that,
Jim? I think that's fair. I think it's very encouraging to see Petland embracing the elements of a humane economy. We're seeing across the country large retailers and grocers and fast food chains getting on board with increased humane standards, whether it be for chickens or beef, because they are recognizing the reality that the population wants to see animals treated more humanely. And it's encouraging to see Petland supporting this initiative. There are always loopholes in these types of things. No bill that's ever been passed in Ohio or probably anywhere has been absolutely perfect. But this is another step forward, another incremental change, moving the ball forward on these issues.
Yeah, John, go ahead.
Well, yeah, no, it's a constitutional amendment. So what we're doing is we're setting basic standards that we cannot recede from in terms of, you know, going back to putting dogs in small cages or breeding frequency or denying them, you know, certain standards for the quality of food and water. But the measure says explicitly that the Ohio Department of Agriculture, the legislature, can go further. We can't get overly detailed in a constitutional amendment, but the authority is left there to get into the areas where there might need to be more detail than would be proper for the Constitution. And I think it's significant that, you know, Petland and the Humane Society of the United States have been at odds on so many battles in city councils and state legislatures. Petland did a bill in the General Assembly last year that preempted local ordinances that set standards for pet stores, and we opposed it. So we've been butting heads historically. And yet here, this is such a common sense measure that even one of the major entities that would be regulated under it is saying, yes, this is a good idea. I think that really shows the common sense nature of this.
Nick?
I was just going to agree with everything that he's saying. It's really good to see Petland supporting this measure and a lot of the things that stands for. But yeah, I think that there is definitely going to be places for us to continue to grow with this to ensure that the best care possible is provided for the animals that we are bringing into this world.
Now, John, your group started collecting signatures back in September. How many signatures do you need to gather? And again, this, you're trying to get this on the ballot for, November 2018?
That's correct. So we have to have 306,000 valid signatures. So we have to exceed that because, you know, there are a certain number of percentage of signatures that are invalid. Someone moved and didn't realize that they had not updated their voter registration, so they used the wrong address. There's just any number of things that can cause a signature to not be valid. Right now, we are going at a good clip. I don't have the exact total in front of me, but we're into the tens of thousands. And, you know, we've got a strong army of volunteers out there. Nearly 600 people have requested volunteer packets with petitions that they can take out into the street and out to events to get signatures. And every day people are signing up to add to the numbers.
Jim, what in terms of support for this, as you're polling on this, I mean, what are you seeing out there?
We're seeing people that part of this is educating people about what is a puppy mill and what goes on in puppy mills and why do we need these regulations. And when you talk to people about how dogs are cared for in these large-scale commercial breeding facilities, if they haven't heard of puppy mills, they're shocked. They're abhorred that companion animals, man's best friend, is raised and treated in the manner that you see in some of these facilities. So I think that's a sort of a threshold issue with people is to understand what is this all about. And once they do, I'll use John's phrase, common sense. It's just very common sense and basic for people to understand why we need to increase these standards.
What about opposition? Have you got a sense of who's opposed to this at this point?
Sure. I think we can anticipate where the opposition will come from. Obviously, the those who stand to profit from their enterprise, the breeders themselves, both in-state and out-of-state. I think we will hear from some retailers. Traditionally, these measures have been opposed by national entities, including the American Kennel Club. But I think at this stage of the game, probably strategically for the opposition, we're not going to hear a whole lot until we get a little further along the line.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk to Judith. Hi, Judith.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Hello. I completely agree with the initiative that the people in Ohio are taking about puppy mills. I myself am an example of a responsible breeder. I breed a large breed of dog, and I have maybe one litter a year, maybe one litter in a year and a half. One of the advantages of buying a purebred dog is that those puppies have been socialized and exposed to people and to cars in different situations, so that when you get a puppy from a responsible breeder, you can expect that the puppy will already be used to people, be used to children, be able to drive in a car, may have a little basic training. And so there are some advantages to buying a purebred dog from a responsible breeder. You can put into the internet American Kennel Club, AKC, and their site will lead people to responsible breeders. I've also adopted mixed breed dogs from shelters and had many wonderful dogs that were mixed breed from shelters. But the woman that spoke at the beginning of your show who said there was no reason for people to breed purebred dogs, I really disagree with that.
Okay. And let's let our panel members comment on what you're saying here, Judith. Thank you for the call.
Judith, thank you for embracing humane standards in your breeding. I, in my capacity at Cincinnati Lab Rescue, we are all engaged in that because we love the breed and we love its standards and its temperaments. So there's absolutely a place for responsible breeding in Ohio and across the country. Many of us who own dogs own a particular breed because they love that breed and how it behaves or how it is with children or how athletic it is. And I think those are important things to preserve in our charge of being responsible for animals. The large scale, as you know, don't raise the animals the way you do. When we see Labrador retrievers come in that have been that have come from a puppy mill situation, the most noticeable aspect, in my experience, is their lack of socialization. I mean, we have dogs that come in that are just absolutely not used to people. They're scared of people. Just traits that are completely contrary to the standards of the breed.
Nick, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, so I really appreciate all the things that Judith was just saying about only breeding maybe one litter every year,
right,
year
spreading
and a half.
It out. Yeah.
Yeah, having infrequent breeding is really important because as a breeder, when you are raising a litter of puppies, initially you have at the bare minimum the care of the mother, which as I mentioned earlier, during those 2 months that the mother is pregnant, you have to be taking very good care of her, making her comfortable, reducing the stress in her life. Then after that, you have the litter of puppies that are born. And that is a group of puppies that you are going to have for preferably between 8 and 12 weeks. And during that time, you need to be providing socialization, care, handling, training, exposure, all of these things in an appropriate and proper manner so that when your puppy leaves your care, that they are going to their new home and they already have a basic grasp on all of these things. And then it's going to be the new puppy's owner, their responsibility to continue that training. But oftentimes I am asked how early training should begin for a new puppy. And the answer is it should have already begun before you got your puppy. They should be already receiving a lot of care and socialization prior to coming to you. And then if they have, then you still have a lot of work to do. But if they haven't, you are behind with your puppy. Your puppy is behind, and you may or may not be able to help catch them up.
John, we got a call from Omar, and he was wondering how will this law address sending animals to testing labs?
It doesn't affect that at all. This is focused on commercial dog breeding. You know, there are a lot of canine issues out there, dog tethering, dog fighting, you know, these research issues, greyhound racing, and we can't tackle everything in one issue. And in fact, Ohio has a single subject law for measures that go on the ballot, or even bills that go through the legislature. So this is focusing on just the single subject of puppy mills.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Cleta. Good afternoon.
Hi. I used to be the foster care manager at a large urban shelter in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I'm probably on the other extreme. I have one of those don't shop, adopt bumper stickers on my car. And really, if you've worked in a shelter, it's inconceivable that anybody would deliberately bring more animals into the world when you see what we see. Because we do see, purebreds as well, certainly. But one of the ways that locally our groups work with the Petland in the area was they just picketed out in front of the Petland and did information drops and for I'm not sure how long it took them, but they eventually got an arrangement where our the Petland in East Liberty, which is a part of the city of Pittsburgh, gets all of their animals, their kittens, their cats, their dogs from the local shelters, and that's I believe a franchisee, so that they had that opportunity to do that. But they've actually established a relationship that's worked out well for everybody.
Cleta, thank you for the phone call. Any comments, gentlemen?
Yeah, there is a lot of our local pet stores are kind of following the suit of no longer selling dogs or cats or even pets of any kind. There are a variety of stores in the area that if they do have dogs and cats available on site, they are typically from rescues, from shelters, and you can actually see where that animal is coming from and you can contact that organization to learn more. Because I think that there is a place for both adopting dogs as well as getting dogs from a breeder. I think that there are a variety of factors that go into deciding how you get the dog that you do, and that there's a place for all of that.
Now, Lori called. She wanted to know, what about local communities using zoning laws to better control breeders?
They would still be allowed to do that. Here we're trying to go for a statewide measure to cover everybody, one consistent standard. But, of course, a zoning law, downtown Cleveland is going to need to have different rules than a more open and rural area. And so that's certainly still going to be something that a local government has the right to do. And I was going to say, I think it's so inspiring that we've got people calling in who, one's a dog breeder, another's a shelter worker that doesn't believe that people should be breeding dogs right now. And yet, on this topic, we can all agree, it shows that this is such a good common sense measure. And that sort of consensus is something that's been missing in our political discourse.
Adrian joins us now. Good afternoon, Adrian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'll go ahead with my question. I was wondering if there was any incentive or if anyone had talked about, or rather I should say I am suggesting, a refocus of the existing, quote, puppy mills. Let's take advantage of all their experience and familiarity with dog breeding and help them become more compliant with this modern, much improved human and humanitarian approach towards breeding dogs. So rather than face a lot of fines or shutdowns, we can have a program would exist that would turn companies that weren't in order around. That's my question.
Okay. Nick?
Well, I think that this initiative is just setting some bare standards that we can all agree on that should be basic requirements. Now, I think that the problem that we can run into with some of these large-scale puppy mills is that the amount of output of animals that they are bringing into the world, there is not enough time for them to give necessarily all the appropriate care that they should be into the upbringing of those animals. And so without them scaling down their process or bringing on significant more people in order to help bring them into standard compliance, it would be very difficult for them to be responsibly bringing in this many dogs.
Pat emailed in, and she's wondering if anybody can comment on the number of Amish-operated large breeding operations there are in the state of Ohio.
Well, there's certainly some large-scale breeding facilities in what we would consider Amish country. I'm reluctant to point out a particular group of people as having more responsibility for this situation than any others. You know, I think it goes well beyond the Amish. This is a national issue that we're going to deal with in Ohio.
Yeah, I think that, again, not singling out anyone, what I think we need to try and do as a public is to be better educated as to what we should be looking for in a breeder when we go to get a dog. We should be understanding what are good questions to ask the breeder about the care that the puppy and the mother have. How old is the mother when she is being bred? Can I meet the mother? Can I meet the father? We need to provide more education to the public as to what to look for so that regardless of where a person is going to get that that puppy, whether it's an Amish breeder, whether it's someone else, that they can find a good, responsible breeder by better understanding what to look for.
And John, did you want to weigh in on the last caller?
Well, I agree with Nick and Jim's take on that entirely. You know, puppy mills, they certainly do exist in Amish country, but they exist in what they would call English country as well. And I think people kind of home in on that Amish question a lot because it's kind of interesting. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who the puppy miller is. We need to deal with this problem.
So, John, when will we know for sure if this is going to be on the ballot?
We have to submit the signatures by early July of next year. And so we've got the winter, the spring, and the first part of summer for people to help gather the signatures. People who are interested can sign up at stoppuppymillsohio.com to volunteer for that. And once we submit those signatures, then, you know, a month later, we'll know if we have crossed the threshold necessary to have it on the November 2018 ballot.
John, thank you for joining us this afternoon, and Jim and Nick, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Senior Director of the Humane Society's Stop Puppy Mills campaign, John Goodwin, Paws Look Listen Certified Professional Dog Trainer, Nick Hoff, and Jim Tomaszewski, who serves on the boards of SPCA Cincinnati, Cincinnati Lab Rescue, and the Ohio Council for the Humane Society.